Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 10 of Our Voices, Our Community. Each week, we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss an array of issues in Roanoke and the New River Valley, from social to political to economics, but also arts and culture and much more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Southwest Virginia. On today's episode, we're going to discuss Super Tuesday and Virginia's Democratic primary. Why is it this is important to us locally? So let's get started. I'm Robert Jeffrey, and joining me today is Will Solari. Will, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right.
Good. Good to see you. Actually, it's pretty sunny outside, so we're going to have a good conversation and so forth. Catherine Stromberg.
Hello.
Good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
I'm raring back.
Hey, welcome back.
Welcome back. Well, and Karen Jones. How are you doing, Karen?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Y'all's good.
We're good. Good.
Well, let's get started. On March 3rd, I believe, will be Super Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And tonight or Tuesday night will be the Democratic debate in South Carolina, where their primary is happening on Saturday. There's a lot of talk about winning the black vote and who can do that. Virginia, with along 13 other states, will hold their own primaries. But next Tuesday, theoretically, we probably can talk about a little bit now, we will know who the nominee will be. So let's jump in, because I know especially everyone around this table has a lot of opinions on this.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the Democratic primary. And I know I haven't personally haven't endorsed or support anyone of the primary list. And I believe the people who are still existing, I mean, we still have Bernie Sanders, former Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Judge.
Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Mike Bloomberg, Tom Steyer.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you still?
I do not believe he still exists.
Why you mean he doesn't still exist?
It's a question for me.
I don't know. He's got as many commercials now as your.
I mean,
as your
yeah,
other board.
I've seen a bunch of his commercials now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No?
I mean, I believe you. I'm just shaking my head.
Is there anyone else? Are we missing?
Part of the reason you probably not see him is he's focusing hard like Biden right now on South Carolina.
Right. We forgot about Joe Biden. That is bad news for poor Joe.
A little bit. Hold on. Did you say the other dude? What's his name? Bloomberg?
Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, he's a Democrat?
He is not.
That's what he claims now.
Nope.
When he ran for New York, did he run as a Democrat?
He ran as a Republican.
He ran as a Republican.
Yeah, yes. That's what I thought.
Would you like a long list of all the Republicans he's given money to recently?
Oh, to Bloomberg?
Yes.
Oh, I'd be curious. Do you have that list?
Oh, I know. He gave money to the guy who poisoned the water in Flint, Governor Poison Flint Water, whose name I forget. but Rick Scott. Oh, no, Rick Scott's Florida.
Yeah.
Whatever. Rick Scott's okay, Florida, another yeah. evil man.
Yeah.
all these evil white politicians look alike to me.
I wouldn't say evil, just misguided.
Yes,
misguided.
Well, but and then he gave $12.5 million to get the Pennsylvania senator, Republican senator reelected. So when you were like hanging on a knife's edge, hoping for McCain to save everybody's, health insurance, well, we would not have needed to be on a knife edge waiting for McCain to save everybody's health insurance if Mike Bloomberg had not saved Pat Toomey. So just think about that, because the woman who was running for Senate in Pennsylvania was very good. And there was so anyways, he's definitely screwed over Pennsylvania multiple times.
Well, I talked about this a little while back, that when you look at someone like Bloomberg, for example, everybody is sort of buying votes, right? Some people are doing it by way of going, listen, here's the things that I can offer as your candidate. You know, you guys care about health insurance. Look, I mean, again, let's not fool ourselves. Everyone who is running for president can afford really great health insurance, has really great health insurance, whatever else. You're sort of buying our vote because that's something that's important to us. I think the problem with someone like Bloomberg is he's trying to buy votes and trying to buy clout and placement within the presidential candidates by flooding every single possible square inch of digital media, print media, whatever else, with Bloomberg stuff. And sometimes it's funny, you know, like his attacks on Trump about how he's bad at golf, and like it's childish, you know, to like talk about the way he eats steak on a billboard. At the same time, it's his attempt to buy votes. And I think one of the important differences, if you want to look at like a billionaire class and what their political allegiance is, you know, again, Bloomberg gave much money to Republicans. He also gave a bunch of money to Democrats. So it's like, good for you. But they're really looking out for rich people. Mm-hmm. And the difference between someone like him and Tom Steyer is that, you know, that guy also has an insane amount of money. But his focus is in the environment. It's right. Not on making a bunch of attack ads on YouTube. And yeah. I'm sure the Bloomberg Foundation or whatever his resource thing is does some good work. And I'm glad he's doing it. And I'm glad he's going to get behind whatever Democratic candidate has. But, man, you know, think about how he's spending that money and to what end and for who. Because, you know, this whole talk about him being a contender and being the guy who can get the moderate and independent vote or whatever else, like, that's just more stuff he's bought. So
it is amazing that, you know, now that you have two billionaires trying to.
Oh, no, we don't have two billionaires. Did you guys not watch the debate? President Elizabeth Ann Warren ate one of the billionaires whole.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay. But I was talking about Steyer and Bloomberg. Thank you.
She did not eat Steyer whole.
But I mean, the fact that now that Trump is president, I think it's a sign that for all these billionaires, and now I too can run for president with enough money.
Yeah,
and that's the scary part,
right? And the thing I hate the most is, we've all seen Bloomberg's money in Virginia, and mm-hmm. how he has like done good things and gotten good people elected that I support, like that I gave him, you know, what was for me a lot of money, but then Bloomberg came in and gave what was for him probably not that much money, but was a lot more money than right. I had,
right.
And some of these campaigns in Virginia were unlimited contributions. You know, this isn't cheap, and I value so much having like that unified Democratic control. But I don't believe Bloomberg values unified Democratic control unless he's in control of it, right? He wants to be in control of what policies pass, and I don't think he necessarily likes the fact that, like, for him to like, I think he likes divided government. I think he likes the idea of like this division, because then we're kind of at this status quo that is very good for him.
But, you know, and frankly, why try to buy politicians if you're a billionaire when you can just be the politician and still be a billionaire? Yeah. And that's troubling. I mean, on I don't know how many different levels.
Because there's no accountability.
Right. And, you know, and I see in Virginia how, like, basically people who are good people who advocated for good things, like, then he comes back around to them.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, you got to endorse me. You got to do this for me. You got to do that for me. And it's, like, real hard to say no absolutely. When the guy gave you, like, millions of dollars.
True.
Well, I had a very nice lady show up at my house canvassing for Bloomberg.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, she had some decent points, which were like, well, you know, even when he was a Republican mayor, you know, he was the first, you know, mayor in New York to perform like a same-sex marriage and whatever else. And I was like, yeah, but here's the thing. And this is always one of my arguments for Sanders and Warren. You shouldn't be able to pat yourself on the back for doing something you should have been doing from the very beginning of your career.
Right.
Well, I eventually came around and was like, all right, gay marriage. Like, no, you should have been for it the entire time. It's not, you don't get to like, you don't get an accolade now because you did the right thing eventually. I think that what becomes, you know, a real key issue for me and amongst all these candidates you know, Joe Biden's sort of in the middle with this, but, you know, some of them have had made some really bad decisions, you know, again,
stop
Bloomberg.
And frisk.
Well, yeah, well, but yeah, even just his, who he supported, like George W. Bush, any of these people who were war hawks and supported any kind of war, like those are all problems. They were problems then, they're problems now, and they will forever be problems. And that alarm just let you know I was right.
Yes.
Sorry, everybody.
It's time to wake up, America.
My bad.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bloomberg. I really have a hard problem with his policy on stop and frisk. I can't get past that. It's like a old girlfriend that cheated on me. I just can't get back. Right. And they trying to get back with me. I can't get past this.
But who wouldn't have a problem with that? You know what I mean? It's a complete violation of your rights.
Yeah,
it's scary.
It
and again, now with his money, he's just violating our privacy even more in a way where he's legally putting his face in our business.
No, that's his, you know, he is in the media business, so he's
stop and frisking your cell phone.
On your TV screen.
But also, can we talk about big ups to Warren for just being like, hey, right here, I'm standing right beside you right here on national television. Would you go on the record and say that you're going to release all those non-disclosures?
She did. And then he had to do some of them. Yeah. She brought him to heel. Yeah.
Well, she did punk him.
He was rise. I mean, he was on the rise. She really thwacked him.
Yeah,
she did a good job.
Well, it gives me hope. You know, if she ends up being the candidate, which it's not looking entirely likely, but she could very well be vice president.
Do you actually think the list of candidates that are running, you think that they can be viable VPs? I don't think so. I don't think so. And especially if you have a Sanders or Warren ticket.
An all old white ticket? No. Bad choice. I agree. That's a bad choice.
You know, I don't. We can probably talk about it later.
I know people get into that, like, and I've seen it a million times, and it irritates me because, first off, I think it's a lot of the Bernie people being like, oh, well, you know, we have a group project and Elizabeth will take care of the details.
Right.
But I think this counters, though, some of the, like, the sort of more sexist notions people had about Warren, where it was like, well, I don't know if she can be tough enough to beat Trump. But at the same time, we don't like a woman who's too outspoken.
Yeah.
And it's like she showed everyone during that debate
how great it can
that
be.
She could totally be that outspoken and be that tough and not, you know, thwart all those kind of like misogynist notions about a woman being able to be tough but also needing to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she did a really great job handling that.
Yeah. I guess I'm looking historically, there's never been a list of people running for president that they just had decide to have someone else as VP.
I'm just a hardcore. Well, so Obama picked Joe, and Joe ran against Obama.
Did he run?
Yes. Do you remember Joe said he was something about, there was a clean and something about Obama's intelligence. And like everybody was like,
right. Yeah. Yikes, my dude.
Yeah.
Well spoken.
Oh, that's what it was. See, you do remember. Okay. Yeah.
But you know, historically, you know, you look at Kennedy and Johnson, right? They're an agreement within the party often, you know, when you're looking at president, vice president, okay, Kennedy's totally got the Northeast and whatever else, but we have this large contingency of skeptical Democrats throughout the South who, I don't know if we're going to elect a Catholic, you know? And so the sort of the agreement then is, okay, well, we'll put Kennedy in president and then Johnson will be vice president just to make everybody happy. So, I mean, you'll probably see something
I mean, I like the idea eventually. Of Stacey Abrams for everybody's VP.
For everybody.
Yeah. Stacey Abrams for VP of everybody.
Well, this is the problem, and I think they did a better job using Bloomberg as a punching bag to get this point across. But you know, the focus should really be shutting down Trump, right? And it's in part because there's no shortage of like fools and tyrants in the country. So if we want another, you know, combination of both, yeah, elect Bloomberg. If you like that kind of billionaire or entitled person telling you what to do and taking control of a system in a way that was never meant to be, and really exploiting every loophole and whatever else for self gain. Let's totally do the fake Democrat version of it and elect Bloomberg. It is hard to find, again, with no shortage of tyrants and fools, it is hard to find really great people. And I think there are some great people in that lineup for the Democrats, though.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead, Karen.
No, go ahead. Well, who do you think of the candidates that we have right now, who's at the top of your list? I mean, I really have not.
Oh, so you want to know our list.
I kind of do. Like, you can rank them, like, or something, I 100% know who I'm not voting for.
Okay, let's hear that first. And let's hear your no votes list.
Well, I'm not voting for Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Okay, we strike.
I'm not voting for Sanders.
You're not voting for Sanders?
Okay. I'm not voting for Sanders.
In the primary. This is all in the primary. Just calm yourselves. Right. Unbunch the panties.
The leading delegate leader.
Those are the people that I'm not voting for 100% in the primary.
Okay.
They are probably also the same ones I won't go real hard for either if they become the nominee. Like, they would get my vote because...
But so why not Sanders?
I see
Sanders in a lot of the same light as I see Bloomberg and Trump.
Really?
In some of the now not as a horrible, nasty person, but in terms of pushing only his agenda and really not wanting to listen to others.
Right.
And he comes off to me, and I'm looking at from the overall leadership piece, I don't see how Bernie Sanders as president, how we'll get anything done. I really feel like we're going to see the same crap that we see right now the executive house, the Senate, and the Supreme Court. I feel like we're going to see the same stuff.
Before you continue, Karen, I have to be aware that, you know, Sanders people probably listen to this podcast.
Oh, Sanders.
So I just want to let you know, if you have a problem, we have your back on this.
When you're tweeted at later.
Well, thank you.
We have your back on this.
My Facebook will probably get blown up. Yeah, but that's okay. I don't care. Okay. Like, I don't
that's
care.
All right.
Full disclosure, before I voted for Bernie in the primary as a protest vote, right? It wasn't that I supported him because I didn't, but it was like a protest vote because I didn't like how things were going on. But I had the same issues with him then as I do now. I will say my top people that are kind of still in the race, I'm loving Elizabeth Warren, and I'll tell you why. She has impressed me from the time there was a forum, I think last year, She the People, and she was incredibly impressive. And I was like, gosh, she's really, really good. And then I hear commentary from people that believe the same thing because I connected with her. The rest of them I haven't connected with. And for me, that's like really important. So,
well, I think this is to address, I love Warren too. I'm a very big proponent for Sanders, mostly because that unwillingness to compromise, for example, if we got another president there who is unwilling to compromise and who's willing to push things through that are part of his agenda or whatever, would you rather have someone, again, starting fake wars, giving billionaires tax cuts, all the things that we've seen in problems with other Republican presidents in the last 20 years, or is it going to be universal health care? You know, if you have to be, you know, uncompromising on something, is it better to be the person who doesn't compromise and takes a strong stance on being against war, or the person who takes a strong stance on, look how much money I made you guys on Wall Street? Really? I mean, that's a literal speech that Trump gave to a bunch of banks.
Of course,
but
that's the general.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Sure.
I think in the general, I mean, I can't. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely like.
Yeah,
if you,
absolutely.
It will be like crawling over hot coals with glass spikes, but I will vote for the billionaire that I swear got eaten by Elizabeth Warren.
Well, let's do this. Karen, you gave us your top three, didn't you? Didn't you give us your top three? Because I want to go around the table.
No,
I'm curious.
I gave you my top one, like Elizabeth. I do like Amy Klobuchar, and you know why? Because I think it takes a lot to eat your salad with a comb. I'm just playing. Okay. But I'm like, you know, that takes, that's like a lot of determination.
That's a prerequisite for
that's like a lot of, you know, so okay. Klobuchar won me with that because I still today am like, well, what kind of comb did she use and how did that work exactly? Well, but anyway, you know.
Well, Catherine, what do you, who's your top three?
Oh, man. Oh, okay.
I know you, we already know you
Elizabeth
first.
Warren. Yes, yes. Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is not a choice. I mean, I just, I have a hard time just because, I mean, I guess I would have to say, you know, I here, like, can we frame it up differently? Who is going to upset me the least? I mean, oh God, that's not even a good, like, I'm just going to be, I mean, I'm honest. I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to, having seen, I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren hasn't done everything perfectly in this campaign, but she's done a lot of good things. And it's just going to crush me even more than 2016. And I'm going to need to have Virginia elect a female governor, preferably like maybe one of the Jennifers to make up for that if we can't, if I can't have a, you know, President Elizabeth Elizabeth Ann Warren. But I just don't know, it's just gonna be hard because like 2016 was hard to see somebody who was so much more qualified go down to an a buffoon. I mean, Trump is not a real, I mean, he's a joke. Right. And yet, you know, all those men and all those white women, you know, let's be honest, voted for him. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I don't know how many white women have had regrets, but I think a lot of them have been called off the sidelines who didn't like get who weren't active, you know, in Virginia. And what I really see in Virginia is I see that women have done the work of flipping this state. You know, Bloomberg's money definitely helped. So I'm not going to lie about that. But in terms of doing the work of knocking on the doors and, you know, it, or even doing the work of protest or whatever, I've seen women doing all this work and running for office and like and flipping these seats. So that's, you know, I've seen that. So that's that's my thing. Women have powered this, you know, state to something better in Virginia, and I would just like to see the same kind of energy nationally.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, did you give me your other two?
No.
it was just all Warren.
I mean, I'm just going to be honest. Like, my second. No. I told you. My number two is Jennifer McClellan and Jennifer Carol Foy for governor. I told you. That's my number two.
Okay. Never mind. Let's just move on. Will. Will, what about you?
I am Sanders, Warren. I would be hard pressed to pick a third, but probably Steyer. Just because
of the environmental.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can get with that.
That makes sense.
You know, not he can be the outlier billionaire who doesn't have to be evil.
Right.
Yeah.
So those are probably my top three. I think, you know, I think people have to be realistic about what a president can actually do. And I think this is an important thing to consider when people are going to protest, vote against Sanders or going to not vote because of that. Democratic socialism is not what you think it is. It's not communism. It's not any of the misconceptions anyone's trying to sell you about whatever. We live in a very socialist society already. The difference, I think, always is instead of bailing out banks and using taxpayer money to help golf trips or whatever other crap that we're wasting time and everything else on, Sanders is a person who I think is committed to, to fixing some of that. He can't fix all of it. It's not like he's going to get in office and everything's going to go up in flames or whatever else. This is not the case. Sanders has been in, I think, in the Senate long enough that he knows how to work.
Anything.
Well, I know,
he hasn't
but
done anything.
That's fine. I mean, yes and
Elizabeth
no.
Elizabeth Warren was not even. Here's my pitch for Elizabeth. All right. Elizabeth knows how it works. She was a professor.
Sure.
She was a professor. A professor is nobody. And she went to Washington when Obama, when they had unified control, she knew that was a unique moment. Mm-hmm. And she went to Washington and she was like, I have a plan. Here's my plan. I want a new federal agency. And she got it done. And I mean, Sanders, what did Sanders do in that moment? Nothing.
I mean,
he had no plan. He had nothing to put forward.
It's all fantastic. But you're also talking to a person who voted for Ralph Nader. You know, the...
Yeah. Anyways.
I think really if we're being realistic and we're settling on things, again, I would happily settle on Sanders or Warren. I think they're both uniquely qualified. And I think in terms of the dangerous direction and a lot of the things that are going on in this country,
of course. They will be a good counterbalance to it.
Are they going to be, there's no great hope. I mean, there's honestly, if you get to this point in politics, you're never going to be the most uniquely qualified person to fix this country or to change minds or whatever
else.
With that said, every time you can evolve and get a little bit better,
right,
and do things that are proactive about what's coming in the future, whether it's climate change, whether it's healthcare or whatever else, in a way that is what's best for the country.
Right.
And sort of defeats that tragedy of the commons, you know, stuff that is so prevalent in politics, right, which is like, don't like it is, and blah, 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 you know, all that other
nonsense.
But here's a thing
too, and this goes on as I'm making my decisions, voter turnout. So we know that in order to win in November, we need to have massive voter turnout. Which of the Democrats that are vying for the top spot right now is going to be able to do that? Which of them have the appeal that those Republicans that are looking for something different may choose to vote, or may just not choose to vote at all? But the same thing, I think, with Democrats. I think that we have to be realistic that there may be some folks that just choose not to vote. Or if we continue to see...
Yeah, we have to turn out our coalition.
And so of the people, and let's take all of like our choices out of it, like of those, who are the ones that are going to be able to rally turnout?
Well, I mean, Sanders got 42% in Nevada. That's huge, especially
caucus,
as many.
Yeah,
sure, but that's huge for as many candidates that there were, though.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's double digits above everybody else, and I think that there is a group of people that we are not part of anymore.
So
sadly,
I mean, the New York Times did a thing, and he's not bringing in new people though.
Who's that, Bernie?
Bernie's not. Yeah,
but again, he's getting in Nevada. He got a very large contingency of younger voters and Latino voters, which no one else is
but
doing
still
a very
is not
great
doing
job
well in. With African Americans across the board.
And that's my
like,
problem.
But he's not.
Sure,
that's a huge concern with me with Sanders.
And if we are not excited. Right.
Sure.
And African American, our vote, we are not monolithic. We vote for many, many different reasons. Mm-hmm. But I can guarantee you this. If we are not excited to vote, if we are
not
excited about that person, we are not coming out.
Well,
so
not a strength, yeah.
Like, so how do any of them make that happen? Because I, 100%.
This is why my universal plan is Stacey Abrams for VP.
Yeah. Well, but
I think
still, though, I'm still looking at the top of the ticket first.
Yeah, of course.
You have to look
course.
At the top of the ticket.
I do think
so
that
what
she's...
You said yours was what? Warren, Sanders?
Sanders, Warren, and Steyer.
Steyer, okay. All right. You guys are going to probably fall out your seats. What do you think my one and two are?
Oh, I'm ready.
Yeah. Well, we've already established
when
you're not
starts
voting.
Out. With,
you're not voting for Bloomberg, so this is a good
no,
news.
No, I'm not voting for Bloomberg. But,
all right.
You gonna do write in? So
you're I'm a write. Yeah, I'm
Robert
a write
Jeffrey
myself,
for
yeah.
president.
We'll get 0.00000%. My number one still is Joe Biden,
right.
Warren, and Gorbachev. I mean, here's my thing. Joe is consistent with me. You know what you got with Joe. You do. You know what you got with Joe. I think also when we get to the general, I think there's going to be a lot of support in the general election for Joe. I think he's a moderate. I mean, I'm not exactly moderate. I think kind of moderate with a tug to the left type person. But I also think, I think his old good friend Obama is going to really help him get him over the top, especially with the black vote.
Mm-hmm.
I think South Carolina comes up. I think we're going to be a little surprised with South Carolina with the primary,
mm-hmm.
with Joe's participation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still hanging in with Joe. You know, Warren, I like Warren. I do like Warren a lot. I have no issues with Elizabeth Warren. And basically with Sanders, I mean, those two, basically philosophically, you know, they're kind of the same to me. I don't like the rhetoric that's coming out of Sanders' camp. I have a huge concern about that. I have no issues with Warren. And Klobuchar, I'm just strategist. I just see the fact that the war, the two states that we're going to be battling, I mean, Klobuchar is in the middle of that.
Yeah.
True.
And so I think, strategically, if she's a nominee, I mean, she's going to have success in those areas, which is going to be critical. So those are my three. I mean, Sanders, Buttigieg, I don't have any problem with young people in the mix at all. I just think he has a lot of things he's going to have to overcome.
Roanoke and South Bend are the same size. That part just blows my mind.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, even black folks at South Bend, was it South Bend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there were some huge concerns coming out of there.
I can't imagine Sherman being president.
Right.
I mean, and I think Sherman's done great things. Right.
Well, I think Buttigieg, he has an impressive resume. He has education and, being a war veteran.
I think he's very well spoken.
Oh, wow. Are you serious? Wow.
But I think this brings up.
No way.
But this brings up a good point, and I think it should be the Democrat strategy for this. Look at Pete, right? In some, light, you might go, okay, he's a mayor of a small town. That doesn't really necessarily qualify him to be president. And yet, our president dodged the military, has never had any public office in his life, has who knows how many failed businesses and terrible, string of relationships with other countries and businesses, and you name it. Even the least qualified person on that stage is infinitely more qualified than the president. And so I think, again, I like talking about the facets of each of the candidates and that are up. But really, to get everyone out, I really think the best thing you can do is focus on what's at stake. And again, Karen, I love that you don't love Bernie Sanders, and it's fine. And I love that everyone has a horse in this race. And I think it's good. At the same time, keep driving home the message. Because part what you're doing is giving Trump airtime.
Right.
By going, let them cannibalize each other. I mean, look at the Republican Party. That's how they ended up with Donald Trump as a candidate.
True.
Because they couldn't just hug it out and go, greater good of the party, greater good of the country.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean,
and that's really what everyone needs to do. I don't care.
I like
again
to hug it out.
Like,
I like that.
But like you said, Karen, even if Bloomberg gets nominated,
I will go over vote for him.
Well, let me ask you something about Bloomberg. What is his strategy? I'm always thinking of, always look at things. I always say, how are you going to not run? I mean, is he running in South Carolina primary? Is he
no?
Going? He's not.
No.
So you have to receive, from my understanding, you have to receive delegates.
Well, wait a second. He's not on the ballot in South Carolina?
No.
But look, if you're a billionaire,
he said he was skipping the first four states and just doing a Super Tuesday
and that's
dive
it?
In.
But if you're.
He's trying to do like some sort of brokered convention, I don't even understand.
But again,
I don't know that this
if
is.
If you're a billionaire and Donald Trump gets elected president, you have to feel like you could do anything.
Mm-hmm. Well,
especially, I mean, look, think about how problematic Bloomberg's record is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hold a candle to Donald Trump's. Yeah. Of all of his sexual assault allegations, of paying porn stars for sex while his wife, fifth, sixth wife was pregnant. Like, think about that for a second. If you were a billionaire who had just money to like burn, and you look at
the
trash fire that is like our president.
Yeah.
I could do anything.
Yeah.
I could take over America and all of North America based on people getting behind such a despicable human as Donald Trump.
But the big thing though that I do believe with all of our candidates is that they will all have really good people around them, right?
So, absolutely.
This is
like,
where
that to be true.
This is where actually one person concerns me. Like, Bernie pulled in as his some of the people that get promoted into the Bernie organization like he's a loyalty first kind of person.
Are you talking bad about Killer Mike right now? Because I love him. I don't know if you heard our episode a while back.
There's the secretary of...
The secretary. No,
my heart.
Yes. Well, I'm happy for him to be secretary of your heart. But, like, no, I was talking more about...
It's a prestigious position.
I was talking more about, like, the... just his... I mean, his press secretary, like, voted for Jill Stein. And, like then he promoted her to that. I don't know. Like that's not the kind of message that, and then like some of the attacks, you know, it was some of his speechwriters have gone after people, and some of the language they've used. I don't know. Like, and I know that in 2016, actually he had he got rid of the person who most concerned me, I believe, which was Tad Devine, who was all in the, the Manafort. He and Manafort were like in business. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah. And why? But I think this brings up a really good issue about party politics in general, right? If you know, for example, that the president is going to cheat, if they're going to use really underhanded tactics on social media, if they're going to lie, they're going to do all these things. What do you do as a Democrat? Do you draw a moral line and go, I'm not going to do that, even though you know it might cost you an election? Or do you play dirty sometimes? Sanders is playing dirty.
But they play dirty against other Democrats.
Sure. And that's my whole point about hugging it out. But it is a really fundamentally hard question, I think, voting in 2020. And the other thing I think everybody should remember is that if you don't like that your party is actively lying, is actively soliciting help from other countries, is pandering to Russia and oligarchs and totalitarian leaders, like, don't vote. You know, don't vote, or at least do something to change that dynamic. Because again, Democrats need to be the good people. But how do you stay the good person? If everybody else is cheating.
Electoral politics have limits in terms of what they can accomplish. I think that's what you're saying, basically. Mm-hmm. That, like, you can only do so much with an election. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got let things go down a path, you know, so far, and that we have to realize that, like, not all our power is contained in our vote. There are other things we can do. And so that's where my concentration on the state level, like, brings me back down, and even on the local level, brings me back down to, like, these are the things we can do. We can stop real harms on the local level, on the state level.
Yeah, I just guess, I mean, what my feeling, though, I mean, sort of based on what you're saying about some of Sanders' people, you know, let's say Warren gets nominated and she hires a real problematic pit bull who's super effective, because we know that Donald Trump's campaign is going to use really underhanded, you know, fake social media stuff, is going to use a bunch of, like, propaganda and lies, is going to spread these kind of, like, 4chan memes and all this other kind of stuff. Like, what do you do then? Like, what do we do, or how do you handle that as the Democrats? But then also, what do you do if you're a Republican who doesn't approve of those things either?
I don't know. Those are, like, such hypotheticals that I don't think that's fair. Like, I haven't seen
I'm not just saying. I mean, it could be any of the candidates. I'm just saying, for me, I think about this often, is it's like, there's a lot at stake. So if you know someone's cheating and is going to be cheating against you, how do you level that playing field except hope that everyone will do the right thing?
I mean, I feel like the elephant in that question then is, like, we have recently found out that, like, Russia is trying to, you know, use their bots or whatever to boost Sanders. Now, how effective that is, I don't know. I mean, if anything, I don't know. I think that they view him as the chaos candidate, and I really don't know how to incorporate that into my thinking. You know, I appreciate that he said, like, I don't want your help, but, like, how do we turn and tell people to hug it out with a guy, like, that we know, like, how do we tell the other candidates to hug it out with a guy who, like, might have inadvertently, certainly not that he wants it, been, I mean, that is hard. We're looking at hard questions.
It's kind of hard. You have to treat, I think the answer is you have to treat, you know, I hate to sound like the old cliche, just got to treat people right. I mean, seriously, because for me, I mean, you can't keep punching somebody, and then all of a sudden after they finish punching you, and then you just open your arms and said, okay, I forgive your punch, let's hug. Yeah. I mean that right. That's so, not. I'm not.
Well, no, that becomes difficult.
I'm not doing that.
Right. So the question is, how many punches against?
How many punches are you going to take?
Well, yeah. I mean, how many punches? I mean, I think the real question is, do you envision, like, is Bernie Sanders a kind of hug it out candidate? Like, is he capable of hugging out with the other candidates, or is, like, it just going to be chaos all the way down?
Didn't he do that somewhat with Clinton? In some way, I mean, he reluctantly did it.
They hate each other.
Well, I know they hate each other.
I wish but she kept
the,
her mouth
but
shut.
But near the campaign, he was trying to get him.
Well, that, I think that's this also points to a lot of the problems with this process, right? Like, you want all the candidates to be in this dogfight where they separate themselves from the rest of the people. But once you're nominated, you want them to reel it back in. And I think they do need to reel it back in. But if we could skip the whole part where MSNBC, CNN, whoever is like, hey, you know, so-and-so said you were skinny and stupid. What do you think about that? Like,
oh, and they definitely did that. Like, in 2016, they go to Sanders and they're like, Hillary Clinton said you're unqualified. And that's not what she said.
Right.
And she vehemently denied that. But then, of course, Sanders hearing that was like, well, I think she's unqualified. And then it's like, oh, well. And then she's like, I never said that. And so, you know, now you've insulted me. And it's like, oh, my God. And then, well, yeah, that was an entirely TV-created controversy.
Again, since I know that all of the presidential candidates are listening to our podcast each week, and thank you all. Good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you for the love.
Thank you, President Elizabeth Ann Warren, for listening.
Right. What they should do in every one of these circumstances is when Chris Matthau or whoever, you know, whoever the equivalent of me shouting at them is from a microphone or with an opinion somewhere, they shouldn't even address it. They should go, hey, thank you so much, Chris, for your question about divisive stuff within the party. But can we just talk again about the time that Donald Trump paid a porn star for sex while his wife was pregnant? Who on stage, raise your hands, who on stage has ever done that? And there's no hands go up, and it's like, wow, imagine that. Can we get back to these issues that are actually important to people in terms of their moral compass and what's best for this country?
I think we're about to go through a period of more punches, and that's not going to be the thing.
Sure.
For, you know, I think that's just the truth.
Well, they know what's at stake. I mean, they know once they get the nomination, there's a very good chance that that's you're talking about our potentially.
I mean, we're talking about potentially a brokered convention and all the stuff.
Well, that's why I'm looking at Bloomberg, because I'm a little surprised that he's not, you know, heavily involved in these primaries. Now, I know he said he's going to be involved in Super Tuesday, but, you know, you always look at someone's actions. And he's doing this for a reason, and I think he's betting on a brokered convention, which to me we really don't need that. I mean, that's just
we're gonna need some big hugs, more ammunition, more fire, and you have to be ready to hug within that week.
Like, you know, it takes me a couple of days to get over your stuff.
So, just think about what a great marketing play it would be if everyone was going, well, I don't like this about that person, I don't like this. If it was just like, oh my God, it's so hard to choose my favorite Beatle or whoever. You know what I mean? Like, that's really what they need to be doing.
Yeah. Right.
Because that's just more time to prop up the party and to get everyone motivated and activated to the place they're hopefully will be by November.
Mm-hmm. So what do you predict out of South Carolina? South Carolina primary is coming this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you predict? You think Bernie is going to sweep again?
No, I think Biden's going to win. I think it'll be a slim margin, but I think he's going to win in South Carolina.
I know Senator Clyburn out of South Carolina. He was going to announce his endorsement.
He did, yeah.
Did he announce it?
Mm-hmm. I believe so, yeah.
Yeah,
who did he endorse?
Joe Biden.
Oh, well then, Joe.
Oh, that's what I thought you were saying. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. I thought it was coming out Wednesday, but I guess he came out today.
Well, someone explain this to me though, because I'm just naive to this about all the caucuses. Why does it matter? If I was to tell you, like, hey, how do you guys feel about healthcare? Would you go, hang on, we're on sec, while I see what South Carolina thinks about it? You know, like, and I'm not crapping on South Carolina or Nevada or anywhere else. But again, why is this determined by, again, I'm in Virginia, so I'm more concerned about what Virginians think and what we're doing. Why do we do this way? Why does it matter what the, you know, the governor, you know, senator, whatever from South Carolina thinks about the presidential candidate?
Well, first of all, they're giving attention. I mean, you have to think about it. It's about attention.
Absolutely.
I mean, who's first? I mean, Iowa. I mean, my Lord. I mean, who? I mean, I like Iowa. I've been there once in my life. Once is enough for me. But, I mean, they were first. And I think each time, I think it's a media thing. I think the fact that this is the battleground, this is like a match.
Sure.
This is the fight in Iowa. This is then you go to New Hampshire. Okay, we're fighting in New Hampshire. I mean, it's a big publicity thing to me. I see, and the media is really addressing that. So, I mean, South Carolina, that's the next state. I mean, that it is.
You know, and
the
fact it's that fair.
Why couldn't they have it on Super Tuesday? Why is it Saturday? It was only 3 days later. What the hell can you do 3 days later? So it's about attention. They want to bring attention to a certain place. And so,
is South Carolina a primary or a caucus?
Primary.
Primary.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a primary. And so, and he's a very strong representative in that state. So, you know, so.
And that's great. And, you know, all those things are good. I just, again, I don't. I'm just still confused about, you know, New Hampshire. Like, who?
Well,
there's more people in like certain cities in Virginia than there are in all of New Hampshire.
I mean,
like,
I personally, if you're going to do a primary, I know they have to do it, you know, one at a time. It's like, I just really think this should be like just one week or whatever. If it is have a national and just primary day,
knock it out
and just knock everything out. No one's first and all that, and just do it one.
I think that gives more, that would give like more of a fair, probably isn't the right word, but you're not dependent on, like you said, Will, like when another state thinks and all of those things. And I think that gives all candidates like a better chance.
Mm-hmm. But again, this is working out for Sanders right now, but you are sort of manipulating votes by. Yeah.
And then you limit, but then you eliminate all the ill will and all this mess, because right now we're just straggling primaries and caucuses, and you know, each as you know, the longer we go, you know, egos come into play. People said something, say something about their mama, their dog, or something else, and it'll create media attention, and just keep dragging. I just like, damn it, just do it one day, have this national primary day for your candidate, and then you, everyone votes. I mean, we can do it. I mean, we do it on election day and just vote and just be done.
Well, and again, you would avoid all this crap, like, you know, like.
We need ranked choice voting to do that, too,
yeah,
I think. Ranked, the ranked choice voting.
Sure.
Is this, this is one of your things, too, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that would work well.
Wouldn't it?
Well, but, you know, again, you would avoid these things like, you know, you're in Nevada, so it's Pete suddenly trying to speak to his, you know, the Spanish-speaking contingency in Indiana. You know, and it's just like, it's just, that was just, it was just really weird and embarrassing. Like, speak to people on their level for sure. And if they speak Spanish, go for it. But it's just like, that was just pandering. And it's because he's in Nevada, and Nevada matters now because we have this debate there. And yeah, it's just, we can just avoid all of that altogether.
Yeah. Well, again, I think, actually I like that. I know I just mentioned it, but I actually like that idea. But that's just
yeah.
But
I'm all for it.
Well,
2024, hey. Robert Jeffrey. You can run on the platform
the platform
one national primary. Yeah. We're gonna put you, I think we have to put you in charge of the DNC.
And then
I think
that's assassinated the day later.
Oh, God.
But you know, I mean but again, it was like when we were talking that one time about how great it would be to have this national election day where everybody's like high fiving, like, "Hello, citizen." You know, what a better way to unify a party than like, "Hey, it's primary day, everybody, all you Democrats, like,
it would make it a lot easier."
Well, hey, we can talk about this for another hour, but I know we can't. Thank you for having this discussion about the upcoming Super Tuesday primary and debate. And it's interesting, I learned a lot about you guys about what you guys are choosing as candidates. I think it's clear to say it's very diverse. We have differences of opinions, but that's the important
thing. In this caucus.
Yeah, this caucus. We'll talk. Hopefully, we'll be on one accord.
Oh, yeah, we
got to
hug it out together.
Yeah.
We're gonna walk the walk, people.
well, good. And so, as we close out this podcast, I always go around the table and say the things you're looking forward to this week. Again, I always like to lean toward the ladies. So, Catherine, you want to go first?
And then all right. Well, I am going to plug, as it's coming up, the Women's March. This is, I believe this Wednesday is the last day to get the Roanoke Women's March is coming up. And this Wednesday is the last day to get your t-shirts pre-ordered so that you know you will have a t-shirt. If you don't pre-order, there's no guaranteed t-shirts. Okay. You may be able to get one, but the t-shirt designs are awesome. Amazing. Yeah. And I know that the actual day is going to be awesome. It's the day before International Women's Day, and I am super excited about it. And also, Virginia, our session, our legislative session is going to be over.
Yes.
And I am just so excited for everything we've accomplished in Virginia. We could have done more, but we're going to do more next year. Yes. So change is not an overnight thing. We need to do more and better, but we're going to do it. So Women's March, March 7th, and get your t-shirts. But go to the Women's March on Facebook and on the their website, Women's March on Roanoke, and get your t-shirts. And that's how they fund the whole event. The day mostly is a lot of t-shirt sales. So get those.
Awesome. Karen?
So quite honestly, the thing that I'm looking forward to most is Tuesday, Super Tuesday. And I just encourage everyone to vote and vote for the person that you believe is the right person and not base your opinions on anything that I've said today or anybody else. But on Tuesday, looking forward to that. We'll be working the polls in my beloved Christiansburg. So just looking forward to that.
She has this thing about Christiansburg. I don't know what it is.
Because it's like a utopia all of its own.
No. I admire.
I mean, everybody is speechless.
Silence means a lot sometimes.
I was going to say that I actually love that you love where you're from. I love that so much. And I believe in that kind of community. And that is what I was speechless by how beautiful it was that you love your community.
That's
so
right.
Much.
Hug it out.
Yeah,
so
hug it out.
I don't know what Robert's speechless was about, but that's what mine was about. So I just want to clear that up.
I'm just speechless.
Robert loves Roanoke too much to love Christiansburg.
Yeah, I love Roanoke. I do love Roanoke. I actually do. I just don't understand Christiansburg. Will?
Oh, this week, what do we got? I love old things, and I get it when Kmart closes down, right? But it makes me sad when Kmart becomes a rent a storage facility, whatever. Because what does that do, right? And sadly, right next to Kmart, one of my favorite spots on Earth, Fiji Island, shut down just after a million years of being in business and being a perfect Polynesian dinosaur. But recently, the guy who owns, this dude James Dixon, who owns Mishap Games, bought Fiji Island and turned it into a game store. And so it's a really rad tribute to the place it used to be, but also kind of breathing life into an area where like everything's dying and they're just putting in like boring or bad stuff instead. You know, like the Berglund people bought that really amazing Colonial Inn across the street and just, I don't know, they're just letting it rot, I guess. Mm. It's not open. They're not doing anything with it. But again, you got people moving in here and taking these like kind of like cultural landmarks and doing right by them. Local businesses, you know, finding ways to, again, breathe new life in places. So on Saturday, they're having their grand reopening. It's in the old Fiji Island right off, was it Franklin?
Franklin,
yeah. So nice. Right off Franklin. This big, giant, beautiful Fiji Island sign is still there. So just follow that to your new heart of gaming, Roanoke. That's what I'm looking forward to. Oh. Business development with a heavy, heavy plug. God bless them. I like board games, if you guys maybe didn't know that about me.
Cool.
Yet. Cool.
Games are a great
way. Is it nerdier than Christiansburg, though?
Games are a great way to foster community. That's true. Just say that. And family.
And mock war.
I have a game I like to play with my son, 13 Dead End Drive. It's about murdering everybody.
Oh, wow. Is that the one that has a VHS tape, right?
I don't know if it has a VHS tape, but this is like a board game. So anyways, sorry. I'm not into real murder, obviously.
Well, the only thing that I have, I think there's going to be, Mayor Lee is, I think he's doing his fundraiser this week. And so I think he's formally announcing because he's having a fundraiser. I'm going to assume because the he's going to have his campaign. So I'm looking forward to see what his platform will be. Is he goes into, what is his second term as mayor? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, second term, yeah.
What if he announces governor?
Yes.
Sorry, Catherine.
Then we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
I already told you, Jennifer is for governor only.
I also know that on Thursday at 7 p.m., the Urban Professional League is where they give awards out to outstanding individuals in the African American community. At the Jefferson Center is at 7 p.m. And so it's more of a, I don't want to say younger, I want to say millennials, because it's not millennials at all. But I think it's this group of professionals that work in urban professionals that work in the community and do work. And so they have an organization, and they award individuals based in the business, education, and social community. So that's happening. So I look forward. I am going. Look forward to seeing the awardees and so forth. So I look and some of the people I do know. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So that's what I have going on this week.
Nice.
Yeah. So thank you guys. Thank you for again. And we'll talk about this. Hopefully we'll have a conversation after the fact, after Super Tuesday. The results.
Oh, definitely.
And then we can see who I marked it down so I can go back and say who was right.
Yeah.
And who was wrong.
Karen Jones.
There you go.
Karen, what would it take? What do you think it would take to get everybody behind any of the candidates? Sanders, Warren,
Obama. I'm just going to be honest. Sorry, Biden. I'm jumping over
well,
you.
No, Bloomberg. Honestly, I think that whomever the candidate is, I think it's their surrogates that will make the difference, that
sure.
can make a really big difference. And if those surrogates, I think, are perceived to be not authentic in their support, then I think that would hurt, right? So I think the surrogates are going to just play a huge role in getting us unified, even more so than whomever the candidate is, right?
Sure.
I just think we have a lot of sway in that.
So you're saying Killer Mike is not authentic?
No, I think he totally is. And I'm also trying to figure out, like, you know, the fabled independents and moderate Republicans and whatever else. How do you get
they are not real
people?
Unicorns.
Yeah.
Unicorns. I mean, there's five of them.
I think that if you are... Like, there is nothing on this earth, I think, that I would vote for a Republican, right? I just don't see that as being feasible. And so I think the same is true from the other side of it. So I think the key is us being able to mobilize and to get everyone out and making sure that people feel connected. And if we don't feel connected to the candidate or people speaking on behalf of the candidate, then I think that's an issue. I think that'll be a problem.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to find out. I don't know if it's going to be, we're going to have a decision on whether, or at least we know ahead of time, who's definitely going to be our nominee. But I'm still thinking we're going to have an issue at our Democratic convention. I hate to foresee that, but I think it's going to happen.
Well, maybe somebody will break those Bloomberg NDAs.
Ooh.
And then in that case, we're definitely going to have a broken convention. Well, thank you guys. Thank you for participating, and thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. Today's episode is sponsored by Crandall & Cott, Attorneys at Law. You can also listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on WROE 95.7 Radio Free Roanoke. If you like what you've heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you. Have a blessed day.